It's our belief you'll enjoy the debate of religions with Long John Nibble as referee tonight at midnight. WNBC, New York.
And here we are, back again for another night, from midnight to 5 in the morning. We do it, yes. John Powers is the man who directs me and writes all this material for me.
You can take off your track shoes, John.
Yes, boy, that's pretty close, huh? Racing around like that. Well, we have guests with us tonight, which is not unusual, although the guests are unusual. We have Ernest Partridge with us, professor of philosophy at Hunter College. Reverend Walter Martin. Reverend Martin is a Baptist minister, director of the Christian Research Institute, located in Wayne, New Jersey. He is author of various books in the field of comparative religion. He is a teacher at the New York City Bible class. Those are held in the Gospel Tabernacle, 44th Street at 8th Avenue. Gentleman that I had the opportunity of meeting for the first time tonight is Reverend David Pomeroy, Reverend of the People's Church of Long Beach, Long Island, and Chairman of the Department of Radio and Television for the Nassau Council of Churches. Reverend Pomeroy, what is this particular position that you hold as Chairman of the Department of Radio and Television for the Nassau Council of Churches?
I'm actually a co-chairman. Bill Baudendistel, who is also out on the island, and I attempt to record programs for the various Nassau radio stations. As you're aware, we don't have any television as such in Nassau County, but we feel that we try to cooperate with the Protestant Council of New York's radio and television department, so we call ourselves a radio and television department. We develop and promote shows of a religious nature on the 4 or 5 radio stations of Nassau County.
Mm-hmm. What is the need for these shows? Or is there a need?
I think the need, or I don't know if that's an accurate word or not, but...
Well, you help me then, please. All right. And select another one and I'll try to use it.
Well, perhaps desire might be the word on the part of the stations and on the part of constituency of the island is to attempt to help people to think. At least this would be my interpretation of the kind of work I'm trying to do, to offer to a rather wide variety of people in Nassau County the kind of ministers or the kind of thinking of a religious nature that they might not get within their churches. Or in other words, a person who attends one particular church gets a particular thought or a particular minister. Over a period of years, he may get several ministers and several types of thought. But by offering him over the radio stations a variety of ministers, in this way he gets a chance to hear at least some range of opinion, range of thinking. We do this on a two-minute basis, for instance, over one radio station, two-minute shows. We do it on a 25-minute basis over another station, and this gives, of course, a little bit more development. The two-minute show is an interesting one to try to work with because you really have to develop one thought and just sort of hit it rather...
What kind of thoughts do you try to develop, whether you take 2 minutes to do it or 25 minutes?
Well, this ranges quite a bit. I've had one person who recorded for me, for example, who used the Charlie Brown Peanuts cartoons as a taking-off point. And there's a book that has been written called The Gospel According to Peanuts. And I think he used this this book as a way of evaluating one approach to the thought of religion. It goes from this point of view to a man who will try to develop a particular point about the nature of Christianity and will spell this out in terms of his denominational point of view or his theological point of view more specifically. I would say the shows that I've recorded so far, I've been doing this over a period of 2 years, tend to be fairly, I suppose you'd call them run-of-the-mill in the sense that they are fairly specifically theologically oriented, although I have fortunately had men like this fellow who recorded the Penis cartoons who does take off in a rather unique sort of vein.
I think possibly I've missed the answer during this dialogue. What are some of the thoughts that you try to sell, whether it's 2 minutes or 25 minutes? I'm talking about the broadcast time.
Right.
I frankly, it's extremely interesting to learn the approach, but I'd like to know what the thought is. I hope when I get through listening for 2 minutes or 25 minutes that I merely learned a new approach.
Mm.
But I may have missed the thought. Could you help me with that, please?
Well, let me see if I can pick up some that either I have done or the men that I have recorded have done. One of the thoughts, I think, would be ways in which the Christian religion attempts to relate to modern society and modern culture. And I think several of the men that have been recorded have done this. They have spoken about the church's relationship to needs within the field of racial justice, needs within the war on poverty.
The need for the church?
The need for the church to be involved and for the church to help congregations and the general public be involved.
In the war on poverty.
In the war on poverty, as one example.
Mm-hmm. Why hasn't the church done something before we had the poverty? The church came before the poverty, or poverty came before the church? Which one, Reverend?
I would say they came together. They're contiguous. Yeah, they've grown together, and there's been a.
And they've reached great heights. The church as well as poverty?
Well, I'm not sure what you would mean by heights.
Well, I mean they are successful.
I don't think that the war on poverty has been particularly
successful. No, I don't mean the war
so
on poverty. I mean poverty.
Poverty
has been extremely
has been
successful. It has had a tremendous growth. It had more members that have become, that could be considered to be members of the poverty-stricken people in our land, right?
This has been one selling point or one approach that
you don't have to sell poverty because people don't want to buy it. They get it as a gift.
Yeah, selling point isn't accurate perhaps, but people have used the thought, for example, of Christ in the Gospels of saying the poor you have always with you, and have used this as an excuse to say that we shouldn't try to eradicate poverty. Certainly, the growth of poverty reaching heights. I don't know if anyone would express it in this way.
It's kind of crude, I'll admit.
Yeah. But the churches have perhaps attempted to work in this area, but on you could characterize it as a hit-and-miss kind of basis. And that the,
you mean in general the church is hit-and-miss, or just in the field
of
poverty?
I'm speaking about the field of poverty particularly now.
Okay.
And that the what the federal government has attempted to do has given perhaps more specific direction. In other words,
you mean they gave money, where the church was taking money?
Not only money, but the a sense of direction, a way of moving, as over against perhaps a welfare ideology, and the. The churches have been given the opportunity to become involved through local anti-poverty programs.
How do the churches become involved in local anti-poverty programs? Any example that may come to your mind?
Well, they could become involved through the use of facilities, for example, through the use of church buildings to house Head Start programs, perhaps.
When you use the word church, and I've questioned people on this before, and I would just like to know how you use it, does that include synagogues? Do you consider the synagogue as a church as well?
Certainly.
I see. Because some people have felt that when you say church, you eliminated the synagogue. And
It's a catch-all phrase.
I see. All right, fine. Just so we understand the manner in which you're using the word.
I would use it to mean religious institution. If, also a theological definition that could be given here in terms of the church as people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we understand it as meaning religious institution, this is probably accurate enough.
Mm-hmm. How do you, you've mentioned about religion, and I guess you feel that it's important to the community. You're not sure?
Well, I'd like to know more what you mean. In what ways is it important?
Well, I'm not selling it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just listening. So in other words, you're not even quite confident yourself that it's important to the community. You needed assistance from me to point out that it has some importance?
No, I just like, you know, like a definition of terms here. I'd like to know what you mean by importance.
Well, have you ever suggested to members of your congregation that the church is important to the community? Do you feel it is? Let's say you never verbalize this, but have you ever thought about it when you're meditating in your study? Have you ever thought to yourself and said, you know, that there is an importance to the work that I do for the community?
I suppose the most accurate answer here would be I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't feel there was a certain importance to it. But I would put it in a...
Why wouldn't you be doing it if you didn't think it was important? Because of your own makeup, your own personality, your own philosophy?
Yes, I would think so. I would put it on a conditional basis. The church as institution can be important to the community in the sense of promoting community progress. Now, this would be one definition of importance, I suppose. And the church can be important to itself, and this is one area that often is taken as the meaning or the significance or the importance of the church. I would like to hear perhaps Reverend Martin speak to this as to whether
I've heard him many, many times. I mean, I'm delighted to hear you for a moment.
Well,
I've heard Partridge many times too, but I thought I'd rather get some of your ideas, Pomeroy, and I can assure you we'll hear plenty from Martin, because once I say go, I go. I leave and I come back later at the end of the night. He's still going.
Well, that's encouraging to know. I can sit back here a little bit.
You will not have another opportunity to verbalize. You're having it now.
Oh. Well,
this is your time. So grab it fast, because soon a sandwich is given to you, a container of coffee, and a Subway token. You have left us. You get home in time, you can listen to the close of the show featuring Reverend Walter Martin.
I noticed, John, that you put me by the mic plugs here.
Just in case you couldn't get a word in, you can disconnect Martin and you'll
be
talking.
I don't object to Partridge being put by the mic plugs. It's putting the gun beside him that I object to, John.
All right, wait, I think I will let you rest for a moment, because I am sure that I might ask the good Dr. Martin to give you a little opportunity later, maybe another 2 minutes like you get in Nassau. Not too much more, though.
Oh, brother.
Walter, you'd love to have answered all those questions, right?
No, I've
been... had somebody to write answers for you.
I've been sitting here entranced by this, and also feeling that the needle is really sharp tonight. And that you're in
good form.
Well,
Ernie promised me if I'd permit him to come on the show again, he'd write all this material for me. And that's the only reason I let Pomeroy off the hook, because we ran out of material. I blew it all. Blew it all in the first 12 minutes.
So we can all go home. Martin always brings the same material with him. No.
What else has he got? He hasn't got truth.
I've got the best scriptwriters in the world, in the Bible. That's all I need.
I thought you meant Fulton Mausler.
No, I was expecting Will to be here, but I see he wasn't with us.
Yes, he's here in spirit.
I see.
Do you think there's any need for the church? I don't mean in his community or your community, in general.
Well, our Lord did, because it says that he came into the world and founded it. He said to Peter, I say unto thee...
Wait, pardon me, why are you playing an old tape back? No. No, we want this to be a live show. Do this live tonight. Will you go ahead?
Tell me, old friend, is it possible to get in 2 minutes, I mean, tonight?
Go ahead.
Christ said he came to found the church to save lost sinners. Now, don't leave now, John. This is especially for you. I believe in the necessity, quite obviously, of the church and of the gospel of Christ. That's what I preach, and that's what I believe in. And I believe, along with Pastor Pomeroy, very strongly in the social aspects of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I believe that we not only have to preach the gospel of Christ for the salvation of the souls of men, but we also have to minister to the needs of men. And I think this is a great portion of the church's work. And I noted something that you said while you were talking to him about the church taking the money. He made a statement about doing certain things, taking certain things, and you said, but the church was taking the money.
I'm sure that I did not make that statement.
I tape all these programs anyhow, so...
I'm glad you do.
I sneak up on you occasionally.
I'm glad you do. Johnson & Johnson adhesive tape, I imagine.
Scotch. What interests me so much...
Scotch and bourbon.
Yeah. No, not on this program.
We're not inquiring into your financial habits.
You don't have to worry about mine. Preachers are particularly, classically, historically embarrassed.
You're scotch about your table. That's
just the tape. Just the tape. No problem.
No, in other words, you're indicating that I said that the church is taking all the money and leaving the poor poorer?
No, I gathered from your comment on the subject that you thought that the church was making a fast buck on the public.
Oh, no. No.
You don't think that?
Absolutely not, because I haven't. I think... that in general, that the pastors, the rabbis, the theologians in general, I don't mean those that are professing the subject, usually are, according to the standards, I think that they're poor. Financially.
You were saying the church, though, not the clergy.
Well, does the church have a method of collecting money?
Certainly.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize that.
Once in a while, you catch.
No, I thought it's the pastor who makes the suggestion that the church was just a house of worship. What is a church, incidentally? So I might know.
Well, a church is a place of worship.
Right.
It's also
usually a building or a tent or an area.
Can be anything. Jesus said, "Wherever two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them." This is the church.
I see.
Well, so it can be in a building, can be right here. Because
in an empty lot.
There, it can be right in here. Two of us are gathered together, or three of us in his name. He said he'd be present with us. If we were there for the purpose of honoring him.
Pomeroy. Go.
Partridge and I would have a little difference of opinion here. But the point still remains that the church is not just a building, but it is a body of believers. It's more than brick and mortar. It spans the ages in faith of the souls of men who will put their trust in Jesus Christ, the one who died for our sins. And we believe in the church physical, and we believe in the church mystical. And the church also manifests itself in various ways, not only in liturgy and worship, but also in the care for others, as Christ taught in the parable of the Good Samaritan. We are to care for the need of others. And we do, if we truly practice what Christ taught. But, of course, the church is often caricatured by people who have no need for her except when they're dying. And then, of course, or when they have great spiritual need of something of this nature, then they check in at Christmas and Easter, sometimes surreptitiously. And when they are ready to die, or when they have great need of some sort, then they use the church or they use God. I think we might even call
it
today...
Would that be bad, though?
Yeah, instant church or instant God. That's what we're at today.
Is that bad?
Yes, I think it is.
I don't.
Well, let's put it this way. St. Paul says, how shall they call upon... Let me finish.
Right
how
now,
shall
we're
they
not interested
him?
In St. Paul.
But
we're
I am.
Interested in St. Martin.
Ah, but I'm interested in St. Paul because he's the authority, not me. How shall
May
they call
I ask
upon...
Who said that St. Paul was the authority?
He said he was an apostle of Christ. I take his word for it.
Why?
Because there's ample evidence that he was. Vast evidence that he was.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, we're getting back to that. I don't want to get away from that subject.
We'll get back to that.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Yes, indeed. But I want to get back to that subject. I accept Paul's authorship of the many New Testament books, and I accept him as an apostle of Christ.
You mean you accept the account as being originating from Paul, Paul, you think?
I accept the New Testament
as originating there. That is
as originating
point,
with the apostles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very different thing than what you said.
Why?
You said accept Paul's word. I say you accept the word that you would believe to be Paul's, to in fact be Paul's. That's a very big gap to be filled there. But we've been through that before, and I'm sure we'll be at it again.
Oh, we'll be at it again, all right, because the burden of proof always lies with those who say it isn't true.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Particularly if they begin with the hostile premise that it isn't true because they themselves have not experienced it.
Well, this is very interesting. The burden of truth is with those who take the negative. Now, of course,
who say it is not true.
Well, that's
the evidence is not true. It lies with you to disprove the evidence.
No, it lies with you to indicate that what you allege as evidence is, in fact, evidence. In science and common sense, in our judicial system, the burden of proof is with the affirmative.
I'll accept common sense. I will stop you right there.
Well, you won't stop me until I make the point.
I'll stop you right here.
Let me make my point before you stop me
right
there.
Pardon me, Reverend Martin, I think we should find out what his point is.
I know what it is. I'm not granting it.
I don't even think that Reverend Pomeroy knows what the point is.
Much less are you not granting it. You're not permitting me to present it.
Present? I think I understand what you said.
Well, you see, you are blessed with many gifts, including apparently telepathy. Well, all our poor listeners have is their airwaves, and I think they are entitled to the right to understand the point which you, by your spiritual gifts, can grasp before I even make the point.
You made this point. You made a point.
Please.
No, wait a minute. I deny that. You made a point. You made a point about negation, and I said I'm not resting it on the negation theory. So that was your point, and I deny your point. Now, if you have another point, I'll accept it.
May I please sharpen my weapons and put them in the and discharge them before you start dodging? The point is this. You said, as I recall, that the burden of proof lies upon me to show that this is not evidence. I say that disprove the evidence. The burden is upon you to indicate that it is evidence.
Right.
That's my point. And as I say, you're presenting a hypothesis that these writings, we have writings from all sorts of cultures, but these particular writings out of antiquity, not the writings of the Gospel of Thomas or the Gospel of Mary, not the dialogues of Plato, not the Bhagavad Gita, but these particular things out of antiquity have a particular seal of approval by God. Now, the burden is upon you, and this is a tradition, not only a tradition, it's a sound rule on which science and our legal system is based. You can leave common sense apart if you want, but I think you think that too. And it seems to be that every avenue of human inquiry is based on the notion that the burden of proof is upon the infirmity, except perhaps your brand of theology. And I think it's darn well right that your brand of theology doesn't put the burden of proof upon the infirmity, because, in other words, that you be illogical at this point, because otherwise you don't have anything to stand on. As a matter of fact, what I'm really saying is that you don't have anything to stand on anyway, because you just cannot conduct an inquiry on this assumption. For instance, my students at Hunter will recognize this.
Before you go any further.
Go ahead.
Now, you have made a vast number of charges.
Oh, of course.
To this particular moment, after making all those charges, you have adduced no evidence except the broad, sweeping statement that it all rests on science and common sense. Neither one of which you have demonstrated to this moment.
Well, of course not. I don't accept it. Well, you're asking me to do something which would require hours, but I'll just simply put it this way. I accept science to this extent, that I accept that what my voice is going over some 28 states at last count. I accept the fact that I came up in a public conveyance which is moved by the fact that we are able to apply scientific laws to a mechanical practice. The evidence of science and its results is all around us.
Do you accept that as the only criterion of evidence?
Oh, certainly not. But let me...
Well, I want you to state just 1 minute. I want you to state that clearly. You do not accept the empirical evidence of sense perception as the only category of evidence that's valid.
I didn't say that.
You just described all sensory data.
No, every bit science. Not all sensory.
No,
not all sensory data is organized into science.
Don't play word games. You just got through giving me an empirical category.
No, you were talking about science, not about empirical knowledge. Empirical knowledge is broader than science.
You just gave me categories of empirical knowledge. I was in a streetcar. I sensed this. I heard this. So this is going out over the airwaves.
Sure.
Sound, perception, feeling. All these things are empirical categories.
Right. Yes.
All right. Now, are you willing to say that the only valid criterion of reality is empirical categories of sense perception. Yes or no?
The statement
be
is...
Be careful.
Just a minute
now. No, you be careful. I don't have to wait.
I think I do, because you're willing to accept a lot of vague utterances, or utterances much vaguer than I am. I don't exactly know what you're asking me to accept.
All right,
I'm inclined to say, by the way, if you're interested, I'm inclined to answer yes, but I don't exactly know what I think you're asking me to, you're posing to me, but I'm not sure what you're posing to me.
Well, I think it's very clear, Mr. Pomeroy. Was I fairly clear in that?
I'm not quite sure here. I think what we're really trying to get at is what are the sources of authority that we can assume to have bearing on the way in which we make decisions. Empirical data would certainly be one.
Well, I think what he's about to get at is how do I know that Caesar crossed the Rubicon? I can't experience evidence or results of his.
I'm just saying that you gave a statement.
Yes.
And you used science as the opening gun.
Yep.
Science being the sacred cow of our age. If science says it, we all bow down to it.
No,
then you proceeded to say, then my voice is going out scientifically, confirmed by fact over this radio in 28 states, etc., etc. I came up here on the subway and so forth and so on. And you gave all illustrations of sense perception data.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
So I'm simply asking you, are you willing to say...
Yes.
Are you a thoroughgoing empiricist? Is all reality connected to sensory data? That's all I'm asking you.
That's more than... I'm an empiricist from an epistemological point of view. That is to say, from the point of view of how I know what I know. I'm not willing to say that everything I know or everything that a human being knows, everything that every human being knows is all a reality. Certainly I don't say that.
Is there the possibility of mystical experience that would be ontological, would be connected with reality?
Well, if you've got to put this into some terms that I can grasp, I can understand. What do you mean by
that? You can't, because he's an empiricist, and they recognize no ontology apart from sensory data.
You do like to file me into a convenient cabinet, don't you?
I think that's where you are.
Well, why don't you find out for me?
All right, are you an empiricist?
As I say, I hate to use technical terms, but I won't be stopped.
you never have been.
Epistemologically, in terms of the question of knowledge, yes. I do not say that everything is...
I hope these terms are okay to be used for a family program. Some of these things are a little shocking, though.
Well, we'll take our chances. I don't want to commit myself to the point that experience is all that exists, by no means. Or that all that is experience is all that is. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that all...
There is reality.
The only way we encounter an outside... objective world is through experience, yes.
So then, to get back to the point that started all this, the possibility of using Paul or another apostle as an authority could be based in terms of an individual's particular experience. In other words, his experience could parallel, in some sense, the experience that Paul has had, and therefore this would tend to lead him to think that this has validity, even though he cannot empirically verify it.
Hold it now. This thing is so wide open, this matter of experience, is that we've really hardly qualified or said anything. Because, for example, I can say, I have the experience